are listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always this streaming on the CBS Media News app.
On the Hour. Presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. A mass shooting at a block party in Baltimore early today. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott is at the scene.
This was the reckless, cowardly act that happened here and that has permanently altered many lives and cost two people their lives.
Richard Worley is the acting Baltimore Police Commissioner.
The two deceased victims we have are both adults. We have three other victims who are in critical condition.
28 people were injured. No arrests so far. Extreme heat warnings are in effect for most of California. KCBS-TV's Joy Benedict is in Valencia.
Here in the Santa Clarita Valley, many searching for shade, extra fluids, and also some cool treats. But when the temps reach triple digits, they're not just a nuisance. They can also be downright dangerous. So firefighters are putting out the warnings about fire conditions, reminding folks to clear the brush around their homes, just not in the heat of the day.
We went from having days where it was kind of foggy and a nice mild temperature, so now extreme heat, and so people just aren't used to drinking the water.
The heat dome that's been holding over Texas is now moving east. Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and the Carolinas are all under heat advisories. President Biden and Harvard University students are blasting the Supreme Court after it ruled against affirmative action in college admissions. On CBS's Face the Nation, Republican presidential candidate Mike Pence was asked if there is racial inequality in the education system.
There may have been a time when affirmative action was necessary, simply to open the doors of all of our schools and universities. But I think that time has passed and we'll continue to move forward as a colorblind society.
Chief Justice John Roberts concluded that students must be evaluated on their experiences as an individual, not on the basis of race. The French Interior Ministry says 700 people have been arrested after a fifth night of rioting. CBS's Elaine Cobb is in Paris.
Many took advantage of the chaos to go on a looting spree, attacking clothing and other stores. The government sent riot police to Marseille and to Bordeaux in the southwest to back up local law enforcement, and many communities imposed curfews.
The riots followed the police shooting death of a 17-year-old during a traffic stop. Thousands of Twitter users are reporting they've been unable to use the social media app.
Some users flagged issues that included being unable to retrieve tweets or the error message, "Sorry, you are rate limited." Elon Musk, who took over the platform last year, tweeted around 1 p.m. about post reading limits to address extreme levels of data scraping and system manipulation. Yes, there is now a limit on scrolling and reading tweets. 10,000 posts for verified accounts, 1,000 for unverified accounts, and 500 for new unverified accounts daily.
This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A new study shows creative activities are a literal lifesaver for young people dealing with feelings of stress, depression, and anxiety. As Catherine Carley reports, the same goes for kids in marginalized groups.
The Adobe Foundation and National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, found more than 60% of young people surveyed reported an improved sense of confidence through painting, writing, or any form of creative expression. NAMI's Frederick Miggins says improving access to creative activities could help turn the tide on a youth mental health crisis.
Creative expression is something that just about anyone can engage in person or online. This makes it one of the most accessible ways for people to invest in supporting their own mental well-being.
Megan says creative expression is not a substitute for professional mental health treatment, but rather an important tool in managing one's overall well-being and sense of purpose. The survey found younger people were more likely than the general population to say creative expression strengthened their sense of identity or belonging in a community. LGBTQ plus respondents were more likely than heterosexual respondents to say that creative activities improved their mental health and boosted their sense of community. Megan says at a time when so many LGBTQ plus youth feel targeted, online influencers are helping inspire young people to get creative themselves.
You know, at a time where a lot of the social media landscape can feel unwelcoming or antagonistic to people with queer identities, it's a great reminder that there's beauty and support out there.
Megan says trans kids in particular revealed even greater mental health benefits from creative expression. He says it's important for people struggling with mental illness to realize they're not alone and that creative activities can also be done with a family member or friend. I'm Catherine Carley.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today, 855-954-1186.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson & Wachs, GTWLawyers.com.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute.
Weekdays from 4 until 6
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Everybody, welcome to the Cripescast. This is your podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and we are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. Here's today's episode. Hey, folks, welcome back to another episode of the Cripescast. Today, my guest is Rosebud Baker. You know her for her stand-up, Whiskey Fits. Her Comedy Central stand-up special came out, I believe, last year. Super funny. You know her as a writer from SNL. She is coming to a stage near you if you are in Milwaukee, July 13th through the 15th. Davenport, Iowa, July 16th. And and I am joined in the studio by Colleen Maraca, executive producer of the Cripescast. How are you doing?
Hello.
How are you, Colleen?
I forgot to put
doing
the microphone
good?
Up. Yeah, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. How did you like the conversation with Rosebud?
You embarrassed me at the end.
I did embarrass because Colleen, more than anything, wants to leave this job to go be a writer at SNL. So I asked, which I think is great.
I appreciate it. Thank you. But it also was like, it was like my dad being like, talking to one of his friends. Colleen wants to get into the business one day.
What at the end of the podcast, Rosebud is a writer on SNL. I did ask her for advice for Colleen because I'm such a great supportive boss, which I think is being lost in your embarrassment. And she gave some great advice.
She did.
Sounds similar to advice that someone else may have given you. Like,
do you need to take credit?
I'm just trying to think of who told you that advice of just keep writing, just keep doing it, you know? Anyway, that's the sigh we like to hear on the Cripescast, folks. Rosebud, I should also mention she has her podcast, Find Your Beach, that she co-hosts with her husband. And she's written on That Damn Michael Shea. It's an HBO Max show, and Comedy Central's Roast of Alec Baldwin. She's appeared on Pause with Sam Jay and Bill Burr's The Ringers, and goes on and on. Anyway, very funny. I really enjoyed our conversation with her. And beyond that, Colleen, what else we got cooking? Anything else going on this week at Cripes Inc.? That's a no. Okay. That's a flat out no.
I'm trying to think. Well, so when this podcast goes out, you're going to be fishing.
Oh, I'm going to be up north fishing. I'm in Hayward, Wisconsin.
Yes.
Up there at the, I'm not going to tell you where
no,
I'm staying.
You don't need to.
But I'm up there fishing on Chippewa Flowage.
Nice.
So. Yeah, it's a
is
big,
it the same place
big
that we enough, went last year?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yep. Big enough body of water, though. It'd be hard to find me.
Yeah.
But it'll be great. I'm going with my dad, my cousins, my nephew, and my niece are going to be there. So
nice.
It'll be a good little family relaxation thing. I'm going to bring my mountain bike, go try and do some of that.
Cool.
And go from there.
Nice.
I do want to let everybody know before we jump into this podcast that the best way to support the Cripescast is go to cripescast.com, click on the merch section, and we've got a bunch of stuff there. A lot of made in the USA products. Not a lot of people make their stuff in the USA because it's stupid expensive, but luckily for you, we're absorbing most of that cost. So we're not making much on it, but... please buy it. I'm just trying to give people the insights and the economics on this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if we did make all the stuff in China, we'd definitely make a lot more money. But which might have been the move in retrospect, but we didn't. We doubled down on the Made in USA stuff. So yeah, it's all great stuff. And a lot of locally made things. Our cribbage boards made in Milwaukee. Our hats are made in Neenah. Our lures are made in Nanago, Wisconsin. So a lot of local Midwest stuff.
That's great.
So there you have it, folks. And by the way, if you want to follow Rosebud Baker, you can do so at Rosebud Baker on
Instagram,
all the socials.
YouTube, TikTok, and then on Facebook, she's at Rosebud Baker NYC. And then if you want to find tour dates, go to rosebudbaker.com. And there she has her full stand-up special linked. It's very funny.
And it is very funny. Yeah. And with that, let us get to my conversation with Rosebud Baker.
I just came from morning TV. Interesting morning. We got into a f-ing hit and run on the way there. It was like,
what?
Yeah, it's been a crazy
f-ing morning. My God.
It's been an insane morning.
All right. So you wake up this morning and you're like, all right. Were you saying, all right, great, I have morning TV? Or were you like, ah, morning TV?
It was more like, oh, morning TV.
It's tough.
Those people are so happy. It makes you want to kill yourself. So it's just like.
Yeah, I know. Did it seem authentic this morning? Was it authentic happiness or is this put on?
Of course not. Of course not. It's like everyone's got their face like painted on and they're just like, we're so happy to be here and we're making drinks. And it's like, how many different recipes does it take before you just jump off a bridge? You know?
I used to be in that business. I used to be in the news business. So yeah, I feel that. I think it's hard on both ends, but what you're kind of just like blink three times if you're okay, you know, give me something, you know?
Right. But, yeah.
I think you got when your job depends on it, it's just like, you know, it's something you get really good at pretending at. And then I think at some point you kind of believe it, you know?
Yeah. I wonder about that. I go like, is that just, is this like the Truman Show kind of thing?
I know.
You know, where they just kind of go like, well, this is my life and it's perfect.
Have you tried buttermilk pancakes, by the way? You know?
Yeah.
Right. But super rude of me to just jump right into talking about local TV after you said you were in a hit and run then. Are you okay?
I mean, which one's more traumatic is really the question.
I think local news is pretty traumatic as a whole experience from a mental, emotional standpoint, which should not be underplayed. From a physical 100%. Standpoint, I'm thinking the hit and run might have more of a present.
No, that
issues.
Was, you know, I've never been in a hit and run before. And I got to say, it's pretty anticlimactic. I mean, you would think it kind of is built into the structure of a hit and run that it would be anticlimactic.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, it's so I was like, oh, yep, that's how it should go. That is. It just kind of like we were trying to get into the lane and then they hit us and you saw them get upset and she just made a choice where she was like, I'm going.
Okay.
And
so you were the hit. You were not the run.
Yeah, we were the hit.
Okay.
We were not the run. I mean, the run, that must be pretty climactic. That must be kind of exciting.
That's got to make you feel alive in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of like, okay, you made a choice.
Yeah.
Your day is, this is who you are now today.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got to give you a little, an edge, you know, like I wonder in my mind, in the weird theater of my mind, I'm now thinking that local news, reporter was the one who hit you and had to get to the studio first, you know, and that's why she was so happy. She like got away from something.
She's like, I feel something.
Yeah. Yeah. Do a hit and run just to feel alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's terrible. I probably shouldn't be making jokes about that, but you know what? I just have a feeling some people do it. You know, I think it's true. You know,
for sure.
Got to
acknowledge
that.
Just to be able to feel, you know, a connection to their kids again.
Yeah.
Just.
What were you doing the news hit for?
It was for my shows at Zany's this weekend. So I'm doing shows. I'm doing a whole tour and I've got, we're in Chicago this weekend. And then I'm doing a couple of shows with, the Fully Loaded Festival.
Oh, nice.
and those guys. Yeah. And then Milwaukee coming up in July.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. We got you coming here. So, all right, let's take that one at a time. How do you like Zanies? Are you doing Rosemont or are you doing Chicago?
I'm doing Old Town. I'm doing Chicago.
Ah, so, how do you like that theater?
It's awesome. I mean, I this is the first time that I've, I think we were sold out. We sold out last night. We were sold out for the early show tonight and the late show tomorrow night. So nice. We got two shows left and I think there's like 20 tickets left for each. So we might be selling out the whole weekend, which is like awesome.
I'm sure you will, especially with walk-ups right over there. And that I love playing that room. It's so like, it's like you're playing the longest hallway in the world, you know?
I know. Yeah.
it's super fun though. Do you enjoy it?
I love it. I love it. And the crowd is always so, it's almost like they're Chicago comedy crowds are so respectful. They're like, I mean, it's very rare that you get like a heckler in Chicago. Yeah. They kind of appreciate comedy the way that people in like London appreciate comedy. Like they just come because they want to see the show.
Right.
And they just want to enjoy the show. They don't want to like, you know, I had to like explain to them at the end that like part of the deterioration of our industry is getting crowd work clips. And so I was I'm going to talk to you guys now. And so you're going to have to be a part of this, but I had to like prep them for that. Whereas, you know, in other cities, they're just shouting out anyway. So you kind of have to, you just interact with them that way, you know?
So let's talk about that. So like the crowd work clips, obviously for people who don't know, if you're a comedian, you don't want to burn your actual good material. And so you use stuff that a crowd shouts at you to try to get a social media clip for that social media clip to take off. And then you can sell more tickets to comedy shows. It's basically like our way of doing comedy more,
right?
I guess.
Right.
So it's audience explanation.
But you're showing whole is what you're doing. You're just showing whole and then hoping that people will buy a ticket to see the rest.
I've never had it put that way, but I think that's perfect. So are you somebody who is annoyed by the fact that crowd work clips have taken off so much and it's kind of made shows a lot more like people shouting things out? Have you embraced it? Have you said just it is what it is? Where do you fall on that sort of philosophical line?
I've kind of embraced it. I kind of am like, it is what it is, but I'm not going to lie and say that like, I love doing it or like I, you know, it feels good and artistically and creatively fulfilling to post my worst stuff, you know? Yeah. I'm like, this is the worst I can, you know, you show up on social media. It's a weird thing because we grew up like thinking social media is like, you show your best thing. You show your best side. It's a very curated version of you. And so the thing about the crowd work clips is you're like, well, this is the worst I can do. This is like as far as the work that I'm capable of, this is the bottom of the barrel. This is like, I'm giving you the scum around the drain.
Yeah.
And, but here it is. And, you know, there's only so much you can do really with crowd work.
Yeah.
But I'm also like, I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. You don't give a and is it kind of like do you have somebody who's doing your social media where they're editing it and you're just like, here's the tape, find something in there and move on. That's a great way to be.
Exactly. I'm like, here's the tape. The guy that does my social media comes on the road with me. I just pay him instead of a feature now. Okay. And I have him come out. He does all my stuff. He goes through it all. He finds the stuff that he's like, this will be something. I'm like, great. And it's very rare that I go back at him and I go like, this is trash, you know? And I should go back at him often.
Yeah.
And be like, this is trash. But the truth is like, I want to focus on the stuff that is interesting to me.
Yeah.
And building a social media following is like, not interesting to me.
Building a social media following off somebody in the audience's dating red flags, not really the number one thing that you want to do.
Yeah. I mean, if it happens, am I like over the moon? Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Right. But I just, the amount of effort that goes towards it is embarrassing.
I know. That's, yep.
That's really what it is.
Yep. I'm there with you. It's crazy too, because your stand up is so, like, watching your special, that you sort of like your word crafting, your wordsmithing is so good and so Thanks. Precise. And like, there are just so many, I felt like, and I'm talking about your Comedy Central special, some of the funniest jokes there, I think I was laughing out loud at, and I think I was laughing maybe harder than the audience in some instances, because I don't know if they were nervous to laugh, because you have a lot of dark comedy, but also it takes like a minute on some of them. And I wish I remember, I watched it a little while ago. I'm going to remember the joke that I'm thinking of specifically. There were just one or two, because the crowd was great. And but you killed on that. You're such a wordsmith. So it's got to be so frustrating to put out, you know, whatever the crowd work thing is. That's kind of like a different thing. Yeah, maybe a,
it's just, you know, the sloppiest version of what I am trying to do, but it's fine. It's like, whatever. And I think I can kind of benefit from that, because even, I'm glad you noticed that the crowd in my special was a little tight, you know?
They were tight. Now, some of your jokes, I think, intentionally were there to make them tight or loosen them up, you know? I don't know.
I was never intending to make them tight, but I just thought, when I watched it, I thought, well, this isn't ideal for a special.
and then
I thought, well, it's going on YouTube, and YouTube is like, anybody that is noticing this or disagrees with it is going to say something about it,
right?
And so I thought, it's kind of a perfect place for the special to go and for the audience to be this way, because the real audience is the people that are going to watch it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And they love to have something to fight for. Mm-hmm. So if they disagree with the audience, then they're not shitting on me.
Yeah, there you go. That's great. 2023 reverse psychology. I love that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I was like, it. I'll just put out the special exactly how it happened. I won't like sweeten it. I'll just make it what it was. And it's more exciting to watch a show that way anyway.
It is. It's so. So did you only shoot one time?
No, we did two shows.
You did two shows. So when you like looking at, I don't know, the it's almost like the jokes are so funny, but sometimes in doing like the editing, people can like up the volume of the audience or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's pretty clear that what you did is like really raw, and and it just really stands on its own. It's such a funny special.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I had something. I was going somewhere with that thought, but I lost it because I'm an idiot. But anyway. That now I remembered it. You're on this new tour now. What was it like after putting out such a great special to then start from scratch and start over? And how did you build your next hour?
It was painful. All I remember thinking when leading up to the special was like, I can't wait to just throw these jokes away. I can't wait to never have to do these jokes again. And so I really did. Like, I never, people say like, you should take like 30 minutes of your special on the road and like go from there.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't do that. It was as if like the special happened and then I just like never thought about those jokes again. Like, if you asked me to tell one of them on stage now, I would struggle with remembering it.
Right.
Like, so I kind of am just like, I just started from scratch and started talking about everything that was happening currently in the moment. And kind of, it was a really different, it's been a very different approach than I took to my last special, which was writing and and picking and being really, really precise and almost like perfectionistic about the way that the jokes were worded. And now, you know, because one of the things that I wasn't happy with when I watched the special was, oh, this feels rehearsed to me. Mm-hmm. I want it to feel more conversational. I want every set to feel a little different than the last set. And and so I just started talking my way through this special and kind of going on stage and really writing on stage.
Yeah.
And I had never done it that way before. And it feels like it's scary for someone like me to do it that way, but I'm like, that's kind of making it more interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you get yourself to watch your shows, or is that like what I'll do is I do some of the writing on stage, but then to get myself to watch myself back, sometimes that's a struggle. I don't know why.
Well, it's harder because you're watching a draft. You know, yeah. It's like, it's more painful. That's why I describe it as it's painful. Like you just don't have the same, you know, pride in what you've made when you're really in the process of working it out.
Yeah. Cause
it's not done. And so you're just kind of like all of the shame that you would be experiencing alone with just like a notebook.
Yeah.
You're doing in public,
sharing it with 1 to 500 of your closest friends on any given
right.
night. So, but when you're writing, you say you're writing on stage. If you hit a line that you just found on stage, you use that adrenaline, found it in the moment, people laughed at it. Are you going to remember that, or do you have to go back and listen to the set?
I have to go back and listen to it, but yeah, I don't have a problem going back and listening to a set that was good.
Me either. It's the painful ones. I usually save them for a car ride, you know, where I feel like I'm killing two birds with one stone, you know, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Damn. That's like, I don't know. That's like cutting yourself at the dentist's office. If you ask me, that's really tough. That is tough.
Okay. I that's a great analogy. Thanks for bringing that one up. You are coming to Chicago. What's like, you mentioned that, you know, in Chicago, they're not heckling, you know, Midwest audiences. Are they different from audiences elsewhere?
You said I'm coming to Chicago. You meant Milwaukee. Yeah.
I meant Milwaukee. Yeah. When this podcast comes out, it'll be for the Milwaukee ones. Going to Chicago tonight, right?
I'm in Chicago.
You're
now.
You're in Chicago tonight. That's what I meant.
I will be coming to Milwaukee. You know, Midwestern audiences are, to me, they're very polite, almost to their detriment. Like I almost wish everyone in the Midwest would just get a little, just get a little hammered before you come. You know what I mean? Just get like a little mashed while you're waiting.
Well, that won't be driving. A problem. That won't be a problem in Milwaukee. I'll tell you.
Good.
That
yeah. That's good. Cause I love like, you know, I haven't played the Midwest a ton. The last time I did it, honestly, was like in the middle of COVID. Nobody knew who the fuck I was. Like, it was like the special hadn't come out. I didn't have anything really. And it was just kind of like me talking to people in the Midwest about like COVID and dark that the Midwest likes to avoid. And it was just like, it felt like a bad first date.
Right.
So you know what I mean? So I feel like everything that I've heard about the Midwest and everything that I am working on now, I feel like we're set up for success, comparatively speaking.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. You've like, learned your lessons from the first date. That's in the past.
Right.
Somehow, you know, you texted the Midwest. You're like, let's just give it one more go. And
let's try our
good.
Best here. Yeah. You know, I've done a little more research. I'm talking about stuff now. It's like, I'm pregnant. I've got like all this material about like what this feels like, what this experience is. And, and so I feel like it's more Midwest friendly, even though it is kind of like the darker side of, getting pregnant, but that's just that's how it is, you know.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Things that kind of already, like, if I were like the comedian's brain, like anytime there's this joyous thing in life, I think the comedian's brain is like, oh great, how am I gonna get 5 minutes out of this? Do you go with the stuff that makes you happy first, or the stuff that annoys you first, makes you angry? What emotion are do you like to start with a new experience?
That's a really good question. No, I wouldn't say what makes me angry, but I would say the stuff that kind of makes me go like, there, that doesn't line up. That doesn't make sense. The stuff that kind of confuses me, and the stuff that makes me feel like logically it doesn't make any sense. Like the things that I have trouble making sense of, I like to talk about on stage. That's sort of where I begin. It's like, wait, so, if women have been getting pregnant for since the beginning of time, how come you guys don't have any explanation for why we get sick when we're pregnant? Why, like, what, how come nobody knows what that's for?
Right.
And how come you're just like, well, we've guessed. I'm like, aren't you doctors? What's going on here? You know, like they ask you things like, what's your birth plan? And I'm like, what's your birth plan? I'm not. You know what I mean? Like, this just happened to me. You're supposed to drive. It's that kind of stuff where I start there and I go, okay, there might be more here. And we'll see. We'll see if there is.
Yeah. That's great. And then, of course, you've got, I suppose there's, then once you have a child, you'll have do you think about that in terms of that's another half hour right there. You know, that's pretty
right.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kind of can't wait to see what actually having a kid does to me. Like, I'm like, what's this going to actually be like? You know, you know, I've kind of always been a little harder, a little rough around the edges.
No,
and
you?
Yeah. And I'm kind of like, man, everybody's just like, oh, it's going to change everything about you. And part of me is like, well, I don't want that completely.
Yeah. Right.
You know, there's like, but you also don't want to go into an experience like this fighting off the actual experience.
Right.
So especially for some dumb, unknown reason, like, oh, I don't want to change my personality. It's like, okay, what makes you think your personality is that great to begin with? maybe you could use some adjustments.
Yeah. You know? A little personality chiropractor appointment type thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Are you going to do one of those gender reveal party things?
No. I'm not doing one of those.
A hard no. I feel like
I'm
you've
not
got
doing.
Some- You got some animosity. I could tell in that no that there was a how would you even ask me that question kind of. That's what that was.
No, it's like it's not even like I just don't even know what those are, like what they're for. I've never been to one, and I've only seen pictures of them on Instagram.
Yeah,
and it's always like some lady like giving her husband a heart attack when he comes home from work with like a big balloon full of glitter. I'm just like,
right.
If I did that, I feel like Andy would have me 51-50 and he'd be like, oh, something happened. She had a break.
Yeah. Yeah. I've only seen it in the context of it starting half of California on fire. So I think generally with like a pink firecracker or something. So,
right.
Yeah. It's probably good to avoid those. Well, congrats.
In some ways,
that's
kind of the most exciting gender reveal party anyone's ever been to.
Yeah. What does orange mean? What does black smoke mean? Yeah.
Right.
What does a carbon bomb mean? Yeah. Who's like, is someone, you or Andy, one of you freaking out more? One of you like the calm one on this whole thing? Is anyone taking one role or another?
I feel like we're both losing our minds.
Okay.
Like
that's
it's
good.
Not good. we're both pure panic. Like we both have different things that we are hyper focused on. he's like obsessed with the door to the baby's bedroom right now. Like he's like, the door is not, there's not enough air. There's not enough air that's going to get in the baby's room.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, so replace the door. I'm like, I don't care about that, but he's, but he is fully in, he's convinced himself that something about the material in the door is just going to stop. The baby's not gonna be able to breathe. So we got to get the door replaced. That's like his thing that he's really focused on. I am redecorating our entire apartment. For some reason, I like, they call it like the nesting impulse or whatever. And I just wasn't prepared for how intense this was going to be. For some reason, I feel like the baby's going to judge my whole decor. Like I'm, like the baby's going to walk in and be like, were you gifted all of this? Like, you know what I mean? So I'm just getting rid of everything and just repainting, doing the whole house in like calm neutrals and just like making it like a nice space that looks like it's going to look like a Pottery Barn showroom. I mean, by the time it's going to be so personalityless that by the time the baby comes, I don't even know what happened. I'm just blacking out.
I didn't know that was an actual thing that's they call it. That's something a lot of people do when they're pregnant, the nesting impulse.
There's like it's funny because it's so animalistic the way that when they call it that, they're like, oh, you're nesting. And I'm like, well, I'm not like walking around the house, like gathering towels with my mouth and like making a pile to give birth in. I'm matching swatches at a Pottery Barn. Okay. Like maybe we can come up with a different term that feels more dignified, but yeah, that's essentially what it is.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's fun. Nice. Well, congrats to both of you. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's super exciting.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dominic Cruz on 540 AM WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Punishing heat will persist across much of the country today. Tony Fracasso is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service.
We see that expansion of the heat into the southeast and the north and South Carolina. Like temperatures say will be around 95, 96 degrees.
In Chicago, the NASCAR race is in a rain delay.
Holding for the race. We got to get this heavy rain out of here. We got to get the thunder and lightning out of here for them to get the NASCAR race going.
WBBM-TV's Albert Ramon says the streets of Chicago are serving as the track for today's race. A block party on the streets of Baltimore is also the site of a mass shooting that killed two people and injured nearly 30 others. Brandon Scott is Baltimore's mayor.
We are mobilizing every resource in my power to embrace this community and support this community through this unspeakable tragedy.
Police are asking for the public's help in finding the shooter or shooters responsible for this attack. CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734.
Civic Media isn't just another broadcast company.
We're your neighbors. We bleed green and gold.
And we love nothing more than to help fellow Wisconsinites succeed.
Whether your business wants to advertise to your local community or the entire state, Civic Media can help. Find out more at civicmedia.us.
Hey, this is Lindsay Kindert at 540 WAUK The Shaw. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me, Lindsay Kindert, at info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dominic Cruz. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 540 AM WAUK.
Tired of hearing only one side of the story? Do you want news and information from people who, like you, know what it's like to work hard every day and still struggle to make ends meet? Then tune in to The Rick Smith Show every weeknight from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Be part of the conversation. Tune in, turn on, and take back the American dream. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
The most elitist scorn towards average people exists within sort of that conservative far-right ecosystem.
We're a couple of dudes who used to be Republicans. We were Dwight Eisenhower, Ronald Reagan, Tommy Thompson, Scott Klug Republicans. This Republican Party you got now with Robin DeVos and Devin Lemieux, the Republican Party at the top. Why don't start banning books, for God's sake?
Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Folks, you're listening to the Cripes Cast, and here is my conversation with comedian and writer Rosebud Baker.
I kind of want to just jump into the beginning of your sort of comedy like deal. And do you remember the first joke you ever told?
I remember the first joke I told that worked.
Okay, yeah.
Like, you know, it was like a joke. I mean, every female comic has like a Disney joke. Like yeah. It's Disney princess joke when they first start.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but it's just like something that happens. Or it did then. And so my take on it was that I never saw like a Disney princess that knew that could save herself. It was always just like a guy that came to save her.
Yeah.
And I thought I really would like to see one Disney princess save herself, where like if Snow White woke up in a house full of dwarves, she'd be like, oh, I think I have a drinking problem.
And that's the end. That's the end of the movie. Yeah.
That was the whole, She's like, oh, I got to go to a meeting.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
That was like the first joke that I told that kind of worked. And I thought, okay, that'll make it into something. And it just, I don't think it ever did.
But it got you. It got you. There's like one joke, one line that gets you your hour or something. It gives you enough confidence. It gets you addicted to it. Was that kind of it that got you? Like you're like, I can do this.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought I could do it. I never really. I still am in this place where I'm like, I can't do this. Okay. But I don't know if that's ever going to go away. But it feels like, you know. It was enough to be like, this is okay. This is a solid 5 minutes. That's an actual joke.
Yeah.
I know that's a joke. That feels like a joke. It sounds like a joke. It has the rhythm of a joke. And that's where I'll go from there. You know, if everything feels like a joke, then at least there's like that. I can kind of lean on that rhythm.
Yeah.
Of like, there's a setup, there's a punchline. So if you don't laugh, fine, but I did my homework.
Right.
You know, and now I'm kind of like, okay, let me just see what happens if I just say this. And if it gets a laugh, it's a joke. And if it doesn't, I can rework it or somehow. But I don't care as much about people coming to see my show and going, wow, what clever. You know, I don't care that much anymore.
Clever is... Yeah, that's a tough word, I think, for a comedian to hear, because it's like, I see what you did there and it's somewhat amusing, but not enough for me to laugh at it, you know?
Right. Yeah. I just want to go on and have people walk away from the show being like, man, I want to hang out with her. You know, I don't want to hang out with them, but I want them to feel like... they could hang out with me.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So you before comedy, you were doing acting. And so how how did you make sort of that transition from acting to stand-up comedy?
Well, I was like, I wanted to be an actor, and it was kind of one of those things where like I grew up and my parents were like, oh, she's like, she's going to be a performer. She's going to be an actor. And I just kind of like heard what people were saying. And I just sort of followed that direction and thought, okay, well, this is what I'm good at. And this is what I'll do. And, you know, went to school for acting, moved to New York, did some off Broadway shows. And I thought, man, this is really a lot of work for not a lot of like actual work. Like there's, you're doing a lot of like classes and prepping and pictures and all this. I'm like, what job am I preparing myself for? I'm never auditioning. I mean, this is like a hilarious delusion that I'm in. Yeah. And nothing is happening. I mean, I'm not acting. I'm just preparing to act. That's like what my whole job seems to be. And the whole thing just seems so deeply sad. And I thought, I'm just not going to do this anymore. Uh-huh. And I took a year off and I said, I'll either be like a dog trainer or a social worker or something like that. And I remember talking to my friend who was in my acting class and who was a comic, Michael Blaustein. So Mike and I, we've known each other for like, I don't even know now. It's gotta be like 14 years or something. So we were acting, we were scene partners at the Esper studio. And we've known each other since then. And I called him up and I was like, I'm done. I'm not going to be, I don't really want to be an actor. And he was like, he was in the car on the way to something. And he was like, why don't you just try doing stand up? Like what? You're always like coming to hang out with me while I'm barking. You're always like telling me joke ideas that you have. And I don't want to hear them anymore. And he goes, why don't you just try doing it just because it's fun. And I thought, all right, yeah, I guess I could. And I think I put it off for like another 8 months and tried it and then immediately got hooked, like in a way that was like, I never cared about acting that much. I never was like, and I honestly think at the time I was a better actor than I was comedian, but I never cared that much about acting. And I thought, oh, this is the thing that I was supposed to be doing. This is the thing that like my whole life was telling me, this is where you belong because you don't belong anywhere else. Down to like my sleep patterns, like everything was just set up perfectly to be like, this is the thing that you're supposed to do. And I loved writing. I loved performing. I never liked auditioning. I never liked performing other people's words that much.
Yeah.
And I just didn't have that obsession, you know?
Right.
But with comedy, it was like, I was like a drug.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also nice that, I mean, I did like the acting thing in LA or tried to, I was never good at it. Most of the time I was doing it. Most of the time was spent in the car going somewhere bomb an audition, you know? But there's something about comedy that just puts you in the driver's seat of everything and you can do it at any age. And it's because it's whatever your truth is at the moment. That's kind of like, what you want to hear. Is that kind of like what got you going with it? Or was there some other aspect?
I don't quite know what it was. I can't like put a finger on it. All I know is like, I just felt this kind of like, it wasn't even really conscious. Because I didn't really think that anything would come of it. I just thought, this is so fun. Mm-hmm. And I was like sober at the time. I'd been sober for like a while when I started comedy. And I just thought, I haven't wanted to do something every night like this since I quit drinking. Where it was like, I can't wait, you know?
Yeah.
And it became my whole life. Like, I've missed family reunions. I've missed graduations. I've missed like babies being born and I don't even regret it. Like that's what's so crazy. And I'm on the road right now, which is like the place that you regret it.
Yeah. Right.
You know, right. When you're on the road and you're alone and you're like in this, I mean, this is the saddest hotel.
You're right in front of the door.
It's deeply sad.
It actually looks kind of
hip. If it were on Hotels Tonight, I think they'd describe it as hip. Oh, it gets more sad the more you move the camera. Okay.
Yeah. It's
That was a mirror I was looking at. Never. That looks like a deep hallway. So it looked like, but now I'm realizing that's a mirror, not a really thin doorway.
Yeah. I'm in one sad room.
Man. Wow. Yeah. That's a little box you're sleeping in there. Jeez. Well,
it's so bad.
Yeah, I would miss home at that hotel. That hotel should be called Missing Home. Missing Home Suites.
I'm like, thank God we're selling out this weekend, because if it was, imagine bad ticket sales on top of this room.
Oh no,
that's
no
a recipe for suicide right there.
That's when you want to be on the first floor, just in case you give it a go.
Just for safety's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does your family like your show? Does your family like your comedy? Do they have any thoughts at all? Cause you talk about them a lot in your special. You know, you give them a little crap, which is the way all families do, just not always on stage in front of a bunch of people, you know?
Yeah. It's not that I don't care. It's just like, it's none of my, if I were to stop and think about that, it would mess with my writing. It would mess with my ability to express myself on stage. And I feel like by the time I get to recording a special, I've really gone through every scenario of like, is this an attack on this person, or is this a joke about this? And I try to keep the joke about, I don't ever want to joke about someone else that wasn't where they haven't heard it, or they haven't like been briefed, or they're not aware. I never want it to take somebody by surprise or to hurt them. But like, people get hurt by jokes. Like it happens all the time where they're like, that's the line for me. And you go like, well, that's my closer. So there's been fights where I'm like, look, if I was a songwriter and I wrote a song about you, you know, you'd probably find a way to be like, this is, you know, I look at what she did for me, you know. But jokes for some reason they're a little more disrespectful.
A little more direct. You know? Yeah.
A little more direct.
Song, you can kind of shroud it in, you know, some flowery language. That doesn't work as a punchline. That's too clever, you know?
Yeah, I feel, and this is really something that I'm thinking about a lot, especially now that I'm pregnant, is like, you come into the world and you got a family, and you're not necessarily, you might come from them, but that's not who you are. And your job on the planet is yours. And it has nothing to do with your family, and you kind of have to divorce yourself from them in order to become the person that you are supposed to be. And that doesn't mean that you lose respect for them, or that but when people go like, what does your family think? I go like, it's none of my business. It's not that I don't care, but it's none of my business. I can't think about that.
Yeah. And so it's also kind of like, you know, it doesn't change your truth on it. You know, and so that is kind of, I mean, that's the good thing about comedy, but also the hard thing is, you know, it's asking you to be at its best. It's asking you to be very honest, and it's hard to do that. Oh, we exhausted the battery. Oh, geez. We're just replacing a battery. Sorry for that.
That's totally fine.
What hotel is that?
Yeah. It's called the Freehand. I'm starting to realize it's like half hostel. Yeah. Ooh. Half hostel, half hotel.
Woof.
There's a lot of people writing screenplays downstairs, and I know that they're not screenwriters because there's a strike. So
yeah, they would never work
right
during that strike. How's the strike affecting you, by the way?
We had to end the season a little early, which was a bummer because we were just on such a roll this season.
Yeah.
And I think everybody was feeling so good, and nobody really wanted a strike, because when you're there, you're like, well, we're getting residuals and everything's cool. But then you think about the jobs that you held before you came to SNL and how they really didn't pay a livable wage. Like, I had to, like, I think I wrote for 3 shows in a year and I never got, I was like, this is, I can't even live off of this.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm glad that it's happening. We would be on spring break anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's, we're just kind of like waiting it out. And then by the time it's over, I'll have a kid. And it's like, there's so much stuff happening that I'm kind of like, it's good that it's good that they're doing it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I think it's really necessary.
Yeah. Do you think anything will come of it?
I hope so. I mean, I don't see us ending the strike until they meet our demands. So yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. I hope so too. It's kind of, it's a wild way that whole economy works, but we'll see. TBD.
Yeah.
Before wrapping up, I know you're obviously having a child. You were a 90s baby, basically, right? That's kind of when you came up. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what are some of your favorite things about the 90s that you wish your child could grow up with? And what are your least favorite? And like, do you wish they had Dunkin' yo-yos, you know?
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. I remember like the ads that we had, because she's not going to have advertisements.
Oh yeah. Like the commercials for like Capri Sun or something.
Yeah. The commercials for kids was like in the 90s were like so wild. They were just like you'd just be like, I have to have it. Like the way that they would make you want like a slap bracelet.
Right.
You know?
Slap bracelets.
Those little peace signs that you could tie your t-shirt through. Do you remember
I don't even know those.
They were like circles. They were like plastic neon circles with like a line through them. Yeah. And so that you wouldn't have to tie your t-shirt into a knot to make it a crop top.
Oh.
You could sort of work it through like a belt loop.
Got it.
You kind of had like a belt loop for your t-shirt with a matching scrunchie. And like, I loved all of the neon, like manic accessories of the 90s.
Yeah.
That my kid's not going to have. Like I'm like, that's so, even just looking at like the stuff to decorate a baby nursery, it's all just like neutrals. I'm just like, why is everything so neutral? It's so boring. Like in the 90s, people were decorating their houses like hot pink. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were like, it was nuts.
You could smell the chemicals in that paint when you walked in the room, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And, it was something special.
Airbrushing, like the airbrush paint. All of that, like those t-shirts, you know, and we just put them on fresh. We'd just be like, you know, like putting on a t-shirt that we just got our name airbrushed onto and just fully getting, just blasting ourselves with environmental toxins.
I know,
you know,
that was the best. Yeah. That's when the ozone was depleting.
Yeah.
Did you have a Tamagotchi?
I didn't have a Tamagotchi. My sisters had Tamagotchis. I never had any interest in caring for anything else.
Okay, that's good. It's good to know about you as a human being about to create. Yeah, another.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. That's good to know. Good to know. You might want to, you know, call your sisters for how they took care of that Tamagotchi. Maybe they have some insight. You know.
Well, to be fair, I have. Listen, I was like, that's the saddest pet I've ever heard of. Like, we have actual pets in the house that you can pet, and they'll like love you back, and that's
right.
You're just lonely. That's like really lonely.
No, I mean, you were that's the comedian in you bringing the truth out in a very innocent child's toy. Yeah, that's perfect. Did you have a TV show that you liked, a cartoon, your favorite 90s TV show?
I mean, I always loved Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
I love to say by the bell. I love.
Hi, it's Dave from Weikert Realtors Lake Point. We are so excited to announce that we are a finalist in this year's Madison Magazine Best of Madison contest, and it's all thanks to you. Now, we're asking you to make us number one. Just go to WeikertLakePoint.com, click Best of Madison 2023, and follow the instructions to vote for us in the real estate category. That's www.weichert-lakepoint.com. Weikert Realtors Lake Point is located on Atwood Avenue in the heart of Madison's East Side. Thanks so much for your love and support.
Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole kit and caboodle. Call 608-819-8255. Okay then, bye.